Coming up on No Limits, the dwindling center of American politics. We talk with Democratic Senator Evan Bayh.
The extremes of both parties are insisting upon a 100% or nothing approach to governing, which makes principled compromise and practical progress much less likely and gridlock much more likely.
Republican Senator Richard Lugar.
It's important that there be opportunities for members to express at least the convictions of their conscience, the convictions that they believe are important to their constituents.
A panel of political leaders and experts, and you. Please join the conversation by calling 866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or commenting on Facebook and Twitter at WFYI. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. I'm delighted to be joined today by Indiana Republican Party Chair Murray Clark, former Indiana and Marion County Democratic Party Chair Kip Two, and the author of the new book, Journey to Blue, Butler University Science Chair Terry Jett, and editor of Howie Politics Indiana, Brian Howie. Thank you all for joining us. Good
glad
to have
to be
you.
Here.
Thank
to be
you.
Here.
We're going to be talking today really about partisanship, polarization of politics. We've got some interviews with Senator Bayh, Senator Lugar a little bit later. This is a topic a lot of folks talk about, and we'd love to have many of our listeners join in by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending your comments in via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. I'm going to start first just by questioning the premise here, whether things are more partisan than they have been in the past, and then from there, depending upon your answer, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing or it's just part of life. I think I'll start with Murray Clark first. Murray, your thoughts.
John, I think I'd be naive to say that there aren't kind of more people that are applying litmus tests to candidates and office holders. I'm not sure I would share Evan Bayh's extreme comments about it. I still think the center rules the day in American politics. They decide state elections. They decide national elections. And I think policy, good policy, will rule the day. And there's probably no other explanation for Mitch Daniels doing as well as he did in 2008. If you look at Marion County, and I think these are rough figures, Kip might be able to correct me, where Barack Obama won Marion County by 100,000 votes and Mitch Daniels won by 48,000. So I think there's still a place for effective leaders who don't get into the polarization discussion as long as they have effective policy.
Kip, too, your thoughts.
Well, I didn't think I was going to come today and agree with Murray Clark on the Senate.
Note the time, folks. This doesn't happen all that often.
I will agree with him that the center in American politics is really still holding. And I guess my concern, though, and where I would digress with him, is that I see in the Republican Party, especially in light of Tuesday's elections, that the right wing in the party is really running off the rails with some of their folks. I mean, if you look at what happened in Florida with Charlie Crist, you look at what happened in Pennsylvania with Arlen Specter, you look at what happened in Utah, and you look at what happened most recently here in Delaware, the extreme elements of the Republican Party are really throwing out their moderates. And there's some talk here in Indiana of folks taking on Senator Lugar, who is seen as a conservative but more of a center-right politician than a center-left politician. If you look at policy-wise what occurred over the course of the last 20 months in Congress and with the president, it's really the Blue Dog Democrats and the conservative Democrats who have actually been the most effective at making change, because the Republicans have refused to take the field. And what ended up happening in legislation that passed is that Blue Dog Democrats had a great deal of influence because they were willing to do the compromising. And so the middle really is right now in the Democratic Party with the Blue Dog Democrats.
Terry Jett, your thoughts, please.
I think I'd have to consider the voting population and who they identify with. And it's kind of hard to determine whether or not they're strictly identified with, if we talk about just two sides, the Republican or the Democratic Party, because as we've seen in the last election, it's hard to determine where they'll vote. It kind of depends on where they're at personally in terms of their lives, economically, and also culturally to a certain extent. If we think about the discourse that has occurred of late and actually how the media focuses on the discourse, it does appear to be rather polarizing because the extreme voices are those that are shown the most. But if you ask everyday ordinary American citizens and think about political participation, who shows up at these rallies and protests, identifying with some of the extreme leaders, I don't know if it's necessarily reflective of the American public across the board.
Okay, so it's more that the people at the margins are driving the debate or the discussion right now. Brian Howey, your thoughts?
Well, John, I think your premise is in a state of flux, and the events of Tuesday, it appears to me that the Republican Party may be on the verge of a civil war. In the primary here, we saw the influence of the Tea Party, for instance, in the U.S. Senate debate that we had at Franklin College and elsewhere. It seemed to pull the field to the right a little bit, and I've used the START treaty that Senator Lugar has championed, but every one of the five Republicans running for U.S. Senate had opposed. But now we're seeing in other states, you know, the O'Donnell victory in Delaware, the Joe Miller victory in Alaska. That, I think, is going to pull the party further to the right. And I wonder, you know, when the dust settles, you know, who's going to be the new village idiot in the U.S. Senate? Because we're seeing some real colorful characters that may end up taking seats there.
Murray Clark, let me pick up on one of Brian Howey's points here. I mean, are we looking at a civil war in the Republican Party?
No. First of all, I got to correct Brian Howey. I don't think the Tea Party folks are a party. I think they're a movement, and that's and if you look at what happened in Delaware, for instance, you had Castle, who had as late as last week 65% approval rating. You know, sometimes you have malpractice and execution of campaigns, and to me, that's what it looked like to me, what happened more than anything else. You know, I would look, for instance, in Indiana. I mean, I think what you see with disaffected voter groups, and they're not all Republicans. I mean, there are some independents, there's some old Ron Paul people, there's libertarians, there's some moderate or conservative Democrats in the group. That, you know, they are punishing office holders of both parties if they're if they've strayed from their principles, stated principles, or the like. So, you know, in Indiana, you know, we've reached out to many of them. Although I would say the Tea Party movement people are a pretty disparate group. There isn't no central leadership, at least in Indiana. So. You know, I certainly don't see that in the party nationally, or certainly not in Indiana. I mean, as Kip would tell you, you know, in the minutes and hours at the end of an election, a lot of people say things that they'd like to take back afterwards, and I think there's a little bit of that going on. You know, as far as a village idiot in the Senate, she didn't win the Senate. She won the primary. So if she's a village idiot, then I suspect that the voters in Delaware will know it and not elect her.
But these, I think one of the points that we probably ought to explore here is the role of parties themselves now, because these folks, in effect, are challenging the party from the outside, storming the barricades, as it were. Yeah. And I don't think we focus a lot of our attention on the Tea Party. You can argue in some ways move on. .org did a similar thing with the Democratic Party. Kip, too?
There's no doubt, and I always think that it's a positive influence on our parties to be reinvigorated with these folks, with these activists. I think in 2006, when MoveOn.org sort of became at their zenith, it was definitely one of the things that helped Barack Obama ascend to the presidency. And I also think that the Tea Party movement is a positive thing for the Republican Party as long as they channel the Tea Party into effective change. I guess what I would say is the thing that I find most dangerous right now is I don't see with all apologies to Murray, I don't see nationally the Republicans being serious about public policy. When the debates, when we had the worst economic crisis in American history, as soon as Barack Obama took office, they decided they weren't going to play to try to fix the problems. When we have a health care situation that we had, they decided they weren't going to play to fix American problems. And so it was left to the Democrats to solve these issues. And I really do believe that it's good for our democracy to have a healthy other party and a healthy party that's putting real ideas on the table, and that just hasn't occurred over the course of the last 18 months because they made a calculated political decision to try to make Barack Obama a failure.
Those are issues for another day. I was going to say,
we can do that when we're full
campaign. Yeah, you might guess
that
I disagree with
that. Well, although that does seem, and in when we play the interviews, you're going to hear both Senator Bayh and Senator Lugar say for different reasons that it's a lot harder to get things done now, that they're establishing relationships across party lines is more difficult than it used to be. They have different remedies, but they both sort of agree that the problem is out there. I'm going to throw this to Terry Jett. What historical forces have sort of produced that dynamic, pulling the parties away from each other?
It's sort of hard to determine, but I guess I would say desperation to a certain extent. When we think about the response of the country after 9/11 in particular, we've really been trying to get a sense of, you know, how to progress and also deal with issues that we face globally and also locally. So right now, while we have wars that we're dealing with, undetermined wars, we also have great economic strife. And this issue of party politics is quite fascinating because we have to consider, well, what really is the role of the party? And O'Donnell, one thing that she talked about was institutional change and actually changing the structure and the way that we make decisions. And I think some Americans probably find that quite captivating and want to give it some thought. So when we think about the issue of party politics versus movement politics, if we want to polarize it in that way, and I don't necessarily want to, we have to consider, well, you know, what is going to be the mechanism for really making serious change and improving the lives of Americans.
Brian, how have you been covering politics in Indiana and across the country for more than 30 years? I mean, in your observation, are things more partisan, more bitter than they were in the past? Or?
Yeah, I think we've entered a phase where the lines are sharper. You know, we've heard Evan Bayh, when he decided to retire, saying, you know, that there used to be relationships between Republicans and Democrats when his father Birch was in the Senate. I've heard that sentiment quite a bit. The other thing I think we're facing here, particularly within the Republican Party, is you know, we almost had a national calamity with the Wall Street meltdown. I remember hearing Senator Lugar give a speech up at University High School a couple of years ago in which he talked about the debt burdens that the society is facing and the record deficits and that kind of thing, and that could be quite a calamity. And certainly that's what's motivated the Tea Party, is the spending.
How has it manifested itself that we're seeing more partisanship these days? Is it simply in the campaigning, or is it breaking down the way government functions? Brian, I'm going to throw it back to you.
Well, you look at all of President Obama's major initiatives, I think we can count just under a handful of votes for the stimulus, for the health care reforms, you know, some of the energy things that they're doing. And so the parties certainly haven't found much common ground in Washington, and part of that I think is a political objective aimed right at this coming November election. But I also think that there's, you know, quite a bit of difference, different philosophies on how we're going to govern. When you listen to President Obama talk about health care and the course they took, and Governor Daniels saying we should have gone with a free market solution, that's a wide gulf right there.
We got about a minute left. Kip, too, I can tell you want to jump into this.
I don't think partisanship on itself is a bad thing at all. I mean, I think part of our system of government, it's important that we have folks from different sides engage in very what I would call vigorous debate. What I complained about earlier is I don't think that what we've had is an honest debate about the differences that we have. I do think that Brian is absolutely correct that part of the reasons that we didn't have participation by the Republicans was philosophical, but I think they also took took it too far to the extreme. So,
you are listening to No Limits. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us while we thank these folks who helped make the program possible. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host, joined today by Republican Party Chair Murray Clark, former Indiana and Marion County Democratic Party Chair Kip Tu, author of the new book, Journey to Blue, about how Barack Obama won Indiana in 2008. Terry Jett, political science chair at Butler University, and Brian Howey, editor of Howey Politics Indiana. We're talking about really partisanship and whether it's swung too far in one direction or another. Kip Tu was making the comment right before the break that partisanship in and of itself is not a bad thing, that in fact is part of the role of parties and candidates to sharpen the differences, to make it clear what the choices are. Murray Clark, do you want to add a little bit to that?
I'm like Kip. I'm a fan of party politics. I think the political parties serve a real purpose. And in Indiana, of course, the primary system is based upon the political parties choosing, you know, their nominee. I would say that we probably should be not quick to confuse the issue of partisanship and just failure to collaborate. I mean, you know, what I think Evan Bayh and Dick Lugar are talking about, there isn't a collegiality and the collaborative atmosphere on the Hill that there used to be. And I'm a creature of the legislature here, and I think there's more cooperation in the state house than people realize. It's the biggest issues where there's the disagreement. And I actually think that's unfortunate, that trend in D.C. I do think that's not good for either party, because it creates cynics among us, whether they're disaffected voters or people that don't think things are getting done in Washington like they should when they're struggling in their own families or workplaces or whatever. That is something that I think is very unfortunate. I'm not here to give you an answer whether yet, maybe, term limits, some people think, whatever. But I do think that's an unfortunate trend, and it didn't just happen when Barack Obama was elected president. I mean, we've seen this coming and evolving through probably decades at this point.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881. Or emailing a question at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can join the conversation via Twitter or Facebook. We actually have a tweet from a listener who agrees that the fringes are shaping the debate right now and presumably thinks that that's unfortunate. We were able to talk a little earlier with both Senator Bayh and Senator Lugar. We're going to listen to those interviews right now and their thoughts on where things are in the body politic right now. Are we more partisan than we have been in the past? And if so, what might the cause or causes be?
I don't think the American people or most Hoosiers are more partisan than they used to be. As a matter of fact, I think increasingly, people are independent, looking for sensible leadership from both political parties. But the irony is that the political process is not producing that kind of pragmatic, problem-solving leadership. And the reason for that is that the extremes of both parties are insisting upon a 100% or nothing approach to governing, which makes principled compromise and practical progress much less likely, and gridlock much more likely. So the real problem is the political process, not the American public.
What brought us to that point, do you think?
Well, there are many things. In the House of Representatives, gerrymandering has basically meant that out of 435 seats, you know, maybe 60 are competitive. So all the others, the real election, is in the primary. In the Senate, and also in the House, but particularly in the Senate, since it's not subject to gerrymandering, the large sums of money involved in campaigns these days, where for a statewide competitive election, $20 million, $25 million or more is necessary. And the folks who will contribute those kinds of sums tend to have an agenda. Sometimes it's very ideological. And then the final thing is just the advent of cable television and the blogosphere and that sort of thing, where you do get voices out there that will attack anyone who compromises or appears to be something less than 100% loyal to the party line. So all those forces come together, and it has really shrunk the center of American politics, where a lot of the progress needs to be made.
That is a relatively, you just advanced what is an argument I had not heard before in this, and that is in some ways the decline of mainstream media, or the expansion of media played some role in this. Can you expand on that a little bit?
You know, the democratization of media is a good thing. It's great to have more voices out there and, you know, letting everybody have their say. I think there's no doubt that that's a good thing. But it also led to people self-selecting. So if you're a liberal, you tend to, you know, look at liberal sites on the internet or liberal TV cable shows. If you're a Republican, if you're a conservative, you do just the opposite. And you're not so exposed to other points of view. Wisdom comes from sitting down and listening to, you know, a wide spectrum of points of view, including others than, you know, your own. But increasingly, people are just, you know, living in echo chambers where they have their own thoughts or their own initial thoughts replayed to them over and over again, just reinforcing what they already believed, rather than reevaluating their belief to see if there's possibly a better way.
These pressures eroded the sort of relationships and the kind of trust that it takes to actually sit down and have the kind of conversations you're talking about.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the place has changed substantially since my father's time. You know, I've told the story of how in 1968, when my father was running for his first reelection, the Republican leader, Everett Dirksen, came up to him and asked if there was anything he could do to help with his reelection. You would never see something like that today. And as I mentioned, the constant demands on fundraising, back in my father's time, there was a saying that a senator legislated for 4 years and campaigned for reelection for two. Now, the political activity takes place, you know, 6 years. And then the caucus system, too, has changed things, where it used to be that there was more independence. Members crossed the aisle to work together more often. Today, our politics has become almost tribal. And you're on the team, you're a member of the tribe, and the pressure is constant to say, you know, you got to support the team, you got to stick together. If you break from the team, quote unquote, well, that's an act of betrayal, and it must be the result of either cheap political self-interest or a lack of moral character. It can't possibly be because you just have a different point of view. That's just unheard of. All Democrats should think exactly alike, and there should be no differences. All Republicans should think exactly alike, and there should be no differences, and you all ought to march in lockstep.
What's the solution to this? I mean, how do we get back to having reasonable people work together?
For the people who feel disenfranchised, you know, and I hear from them all the time, people who say, we need more independence in Washington. We need more pragmatists and moderates rather than ideologues and strident partisans. But folks who feel that way need to rise up and take our political system back and basically not vote for people who are too partisan, not vote for people who are too ideological. But there are a few rays of hope. I mean, for example, in the last presidential election, the rise of the Internet as a way to raise campaign funds has a great deal of promise because, you know, millions of people who can't contribute $500,000 or that sort of thing, but can contribute $5 or $10, got involved. And so that has some promise to circumvent the special interests and the ultra wealthy and have ordinary citizens take the process back. So we need more things like that that enfranchise regular people.
A Tea Party or a move on of the center, as it were?
Yes, that would be most helpful, but regrettably, very often it's an oxymoron, you know,
yeah.
Passionate moderates.
Yes.
But that's what we need. Sensible people who know that, look, neither side is right all of the time, and what matters is not whether an idea is Democrat or Republican or liberal or conservative. What matters is whether the idea works. Will it create jobs? Will it get the deficit down? Will it free us of our dependence on oil? Will it make health care more affordable? How is it going to help educate my child? You know, those sorts of things. Will it work? That ultimately is all that matters.
Hi, this is John Kroll. You are listening to No Limits. That was Senator Evan Bayh talking about the increased sort of polarization of American politics. I'd like to invite you to join the conversation by calling 866-476-3881 or emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org. We also were fortunate enough to talk to Senator Richard Lugar, who shared his thoughts on where things are right now. You've been able to reach across party lines, obviously, the most prominently working with Sam Nunn on issues of proliferation, obviously working with Lee Hamilton to help craft foreign policy. Has that gotten easier or harder over time? And if it's gotten harder, what's made it harder?
I don't think it's become more difficult. I think there just has to be the will to do so. Perhaps my work in Agriculture Committee and the Foreign Relations Committee, these are the two major responsibilities I've had, have fostered this, because in the case of foreign relations, it's always seemed to be very important, whether I was in the majority or minority, that America speaks to the rest of the world with as strong a voice as possible. Now, we may not always be unanimous, but when I was chairman of the committee, I sought unanimity if I could possibly get it, or at least as large a majority of a bipartisan character as I could, simply because I knew it would make more of a difference to the Russians or to NATO or to the Chinese or to Venezuela or whoever else it is we were attempting to influence, as opposed to their witnessing a 9-8 vote and wondering, as a matter of fact, really where the conviction of this country might be. I think in the agriculture situation, this always has been a much more nonpartisan situation. Namely, many senators are on the Ag Committee to begin with because they have an interest in farming, or they are representing particular states that have strong crop interests. And therefore, they are there really to serve their clients, not really their party particularly. We have been involved in a very deep recession of great personal hardship to Americans. Now, history will tell whether this was right or wrong, but there are many, and I'm among them, who feel that President Obama really needed to devote his entire effort from the very beginning to alleviating joblessness in America, to turning around the economy. But that really had to be the major focus, that not much else was going to occur that's going to be constructive until really we're back to work again. And we are not borrowing excessive amounts of money from the Chinese, the Germans, the UAE, anybody else, becoming increasingly desperate in terms of our fiscal condition. But that was not the course that they decided to follow. In fairness, President Obama would say, well, we passed a large stimulus package, but most of that package really was designed for projects that are going to be occurring for years to come. What really was on their minds was the passage of universal health care coverage, likewise banking reform, various other causes that fell by the wayside, but which were seen as preeminent. And that required really absolute partisanship. So the debate will continue on, but the animosities that were created were really severe. Hopefully we will not have another ordeal of this variety, but I just simply cite this as being very, very unusual, even beyond the intensity of partisanship I had witnessed before.
Is there still something that we would consider a loyal opposition? And if so, what defines it?
I believe there is always a loyal opposition, and that is important in the governance of our country. I would say that it's important that the majority, in fact, try to set an agenda. But it's also important that there be opportunities for members to express total independence from everything else going on in the world, but at least the convictions of their conscience, the convictions that they believe are important to their constituents, without being bound by party discipline to the nth degree and tens and hundreds of votes. I think this is where the problem comes. In the past, very clearly. There have been votes that were very close, but by and large, on the very important issues that face the country, there have been sizable majorities because people understood the danger to our country.
Is that the key, really, you think, to cutting across or cutting through the partisanship of this era, is to find a few issues such as this that presumably both sides could agree on? Or, you know, I think of the George Packer's piece in the New Yorker, he made an argument that it's restoring those social relationships, that without a certain degree of trust, you're not going to be able to work across the lines at all, and that trust is entirely broken down.
I have trust in a great number of senators and have good relations, I hope, with all of them. There are, however, these party discipline problems that I've mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. that Senator Bayh had commented on, and which the pressures simply to keep the party line alive take hold, and these are very considerable pressures. So it could be, for example, if after the November election there are very different numbers, without knowing who controls either house, but very different numbers than we have now, my guess is that we're going to have much more reaching out across the aisle because those majorities will be much harder to find. You can't simply, as the Democratic majority leader, as Harry Reid now does, demand all 60 Democrats vote the same way come hell or high water.
You mentioned the fact that you've got trust with other many of the other senators. Are you the exception there, or are you the rule?
Oh, I think that there is a great deal of trust of most senators of each other. For many, this is less easily proven because they're not in responsible positions. They're not either chairman or ranking member or a leader in some particular area. So, therefore, the trust or lack of it is not conspicuous.
That was Senator Richard Lugar, who spoke with us a little while ago about the issue of partisanship in Washington. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host, and we are talking about really this issue of partisanship, polarization, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. Terry Chett, could I ask you to comment? Is there a cost to the increased levels of partisanship?
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a cost in time and also a cost in, you know, finally making decisions. And if there's no compromises made on all of these policies that affect so many people, I mean, there's been information that came out today about the poverty levels, that they're increasing. And so these things need to be addressed and also the global challenges that we have to face. So the system is already designed to be incremental in terms of change. And when you finally do have a policy put into effect, we still have the bureaucracy to navigate to actually implement those policies, which also take time. So there's great costs, and I think that's why the American people, they recognize that, and they know that we need some decisions made and compromises have to take place as soon as possible. So I think that's why you have so many, I guess, disaffected people.
You're listening to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, your host. I would invite you to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending us your comments via Twitter or Facebook. We're going to take a short break right now so that we can thank the people who helped make this program possible. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible on 90.1 by your membership and by Clarion Health, recipient of Magnet Recognition for Nursing Excellence from the American Nurses Credentialing Center. Together, Clarion doctors and nurses are dedicated to providing the expertise and care patients expect and deserve. More at clarion.org. It'll be over before you know it. This year's online auction ends on September 20th, so visit the auction page at WFYI.org before it's too late to bid on items like a $150 gift certificate for the Capitol Grill, courtesy of the Capitol Grill in downtown Indianapolis. Weather forecast for this afternoon, scattered showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high reaching 82 degrees. For tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 57. It's 80 degrees and partly cloudy. You're listening to WFYI 90.1 FM and HD1, Indianapolis. For your information, the time is 12:40.
Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We're talking today about the state of the body politic in the United States and in Indiana. Our guests have been Indiana Republican Party Chair Murray Clark, who had to leave, former Indiana and Marion County Democratic Party Chair Kip Tu, who also has a new book out, Journey to Blue, about how Barack Obama managed to capture Indiana in the 2008 election, Terry Jett, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at Butler University, and Brian Howey, who is the editor of Howey Politics Indiana. I would invite all of you to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You also can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org or send your comments via Twitter or Facebook at WFYI. Kip Tude, you had a comment or you wanted to make?
Yeah, I was very interested in what both senators had to say with respect to this, and I'd like to gently disagree with Senator Bai, although he's not here, and saying that we don't have pragmatic leadership. I think that, it's really no surprise to you, but I think that President Obama has been a very pragmatic leader and has accomplished with health care reform what was a middle-of-the-road compromise. If I know I've said it before, but it was really the Blue Dog Democrats who led what actually came to be. It was not a government takeover of health care. We don't have a Canadian-style system. We don't have a English-style system. The bill that actually passed was a bill that was very moderate. It didn't even have a public option in it. So the bill that was passed, a lot of the liberal elements of our party didn't agree with. And so I think that President Obama has been very pragmatic. He stayed with the Iraq War, kept his promise to take combat troops out, but he stayed with it. He's staying in Afghanistan. So he's been, I think, really looking at issues and how to solve them pragmatically. He does, though, I mean, to get to the point of the show, he does have pressures from the liberal base, as do the conservatives have pressure from the Tea Party and the conservative base. I would just say, I know my view is probably skewed, but I would just say that I think that on the Republican side, they've gone completely off the rails. I mean, they are purging their moderates. They really are. And I think Senator Lugar is an endangered species among the Republican Party.
Well, in theory, at least in much of American history, when you see situations like this where the extremes are sort of pulling things, that actually has increased the leverage from moderates. Why is it not doing that now, Brian Howey?
Well, Kip and I probably, attended probably more than a dozen Barack Obama rallies in the 2008 campaign. And one of the things he always said was he was going to reach out to Republicans. He invited them to become part of the process. And while I agree with Kip that I think Obama has been a pretty pragmatic president, I'm not sure that that's extended down to congressional leadership. And I'll give you an example. I had a conversation with Congressman Mike Pence, who said that House Rules Committee staff have told him that for the first time in history, not a single bill in this past session of Congress has been open to what's called open rule. That is where anybody can come in and make amendments. And so a lot of the conversations have been, the Republicans didn't participate in the health reforms or the stimulus package. And Pence makes a case that they've basically been shut out by congressional leadership. And if that's the case, and nobody's challenged him or because I published that in Howey Politics, nobody's challenged that, then that's a problem. I'm not sure the Obama style has really come down to the congressional level.
The phone lines literally have exploded right now. I don't know what it was that triggered them, but we literally have all sorts of callers lined up. I'm going to start taking them right now. Philip?
Yes.
Are you with us? Thank you for joining the program.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
It occurred to me in listening to Senators Bai and Lugar that their comments were simply a reflection of their own political generations. Senator Lugar is the one of the elder statesmen, and he seems to be describing an era gone by in Congress.
Sounds like we lost the caller. Kip, too, could you respond to that? I have heard the comment in the past that Lugar's not a great barometer because he's sort of a caucus of one.
Oh, he's back.
He's back? Philip, you're back with us? Good.
Yes. Sorry, I went through the dead zone. Anyway.
Oh, okay. Good to know it wasn't on our end. All right. Thanks.
In any event, it occurs to me that Senator Lugar's comments seem to reflect a bygone era in the Congress when senators could work together to find common ground. And Senator Bayh alluded to that discussing his father's career when Senator Dirksen crossed the line to offer.
Yep, we lost him again. Okay. Kip, do you want to pick up on your comment?
Yeah, I think that there's a point well taken. Former Senator Clark, Chairman Clark, also made the point that at the Indiana General Assembly, folks are forced to work together because they're stuck here in town together and tend to spend more time together. I think in Congress, that has gone away, and so the personal relationships no longer exist. And so it's much easier if you're not sitting across the table from someone to lambast them and be bombastic about it than if you have to sit across from them on a daily basis and talk with them. Much more reasonable behavior tends to exist when people are sitting across the table from one another.
And they go out and have dinner and all of that sort of stuff. I know in that New Yorker piece that George Packer did, he talked about how they were trying to get these bipartisan breakfasts together, and literally nobody would show up for them. Or if they did, they were all people from the same party. So yeah. I'm going to take another call right now. Alexandra.
Yes, hi. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
I do have a quick question, a comment about sort of the conversation that's occurred. I live here in Indiana, but I've lived in several places, including New York and Florida, and one of the things that I find interesting about Indiana is most of us here are real fiscal conservatives, but also pretty socially liberal. I mean, most of us are pro-choice, most of us believe in some sort of health care system, most of us believe in some sort of gun control or something like that, and I guess I feel very concerned that the fringe of the Republican Party is forcing it to be so much more conservative than even we in Indiana, who are very conservative, than we in Indiana are. And I'm wondering, and I know a lot of people are thinking that this is about spending, but it doesn't really seem to me to be about spending. It really seems to be a movement that's much more than that, and I'm still trying to get my hands on or my mind wrapped around what is the motivation and what is the way to get the Tea Party to feel that they're at the table, but at the same time get them to listen more to the center, because that's what most of us are.
Brian, how have you been covering the Tea Party for quite some time? What are your thoughts on that? I mean, how do you integrate the Tea Party into sort of the mainstream?
Well,
politics.
I think that remains to be seen. Right now, I think we're kind of in the shout-out period with the Tea Party movement. I agree with Murray Clark. It is a movement. They feel like they've not been heard. Congressman Pence, I'll use another example. He's been very concerned about unfunded mandates. He voted against the No Child Left Behind, the Medicare prescription drug plan. Basically fell on deaf ears. The Republicans controlled everything in Congress for most of the Bush presidency, and as the saying goes, they spent like drunken sailors. And so that, I think, is what has really ignited the movement with the Tea Partiers. They see an unsustainable, and Senator Bayh uses that phrase when it comes to the deficits and the debt and everything. And that is, I think, the key motivating factor there. And I think what they're trying to do, I mean, I heard the Republican nominee for New York Governor Palladino last night saying, I'm going to go in and take out a government. And I think that's what they want to do. So I'm not sure that moderate voices are going to be real influential with the Tea Party movement.
Well, and we did hear with one of the Tea Party candidates here in the state of Indiana, references to shooting people during the primary, which is not that stretches the limits of political discourse. Terry Jett.
Yeah, I also want to think about who actually is a part of the Tea Party, because there's one thing that we haven't brought up, and that's the issue of race. And the Tea Party kind of surfaced almost immediately as some sort of movement, but there was so much issues of this race baiting sort of going on, and a lot of people wondered if that was their a collective was a response to Barack Obama and who he is and what he suggests to a lot of people in terms of representation. There's been this question of late in terms of his own religious identification that keeps surfacing over and over again, even though he has spoken to that countless times. And some of the rhetoric that comes largely associated with the Tea Party tends to fall along racial lines. And so I think that's also something to consider when we think about, I know we're talking about partisanship also, but there's also some cultural issues that we need to consider.
Well, I'd like to thank Alexandra for calling. We do have a lot of callers stacked up right now, so I'm going to try to get to more of them. But I want to pick up on that point because it was one Senator Bayh made about how having sort of the diminution of the mainstream media's role in all of this has changed things. In some ways, it's expanded the process and made it much more democratic, but there's really not anyone playing referee anymore either, which means, you know, I've talked with Dennis Ryerson, who's the executive editor of the Indianapolis Star, who said one morning he spent most of his time answering emails and getting phone calls about the fact that they pointed out in the story about that poll showing that a surprising number of Americans thought Barack Obama was a Muslim, when in fact he's not, simply making that factual assertion in the story that he is not a Muslim, opened the paper up to all sorts of criticism. Is the fact that mainstream media really isn't playing that role anymore as arbiter of what's factual?
No, they aren't. I mean, first of all, it's a shrinking number of people who are watching or picking up what some media try to make themselves, which are independent arbiters, are sort of the referees. There are a few still around. I think Brian does hit the best job he can to try to be a referee. And here, the local media, I think, tries to do a good job. I mean, the local TV stations, I don't think a single one of them is partisan one way or the other. But the national media, certainly MSNBC, has a liberal slant. And Fox News, you know, my view of Fox News is that they're just an arm of the Republican Party. So CNN hasn't figured out, I think, what they want to be.
May be why they're dead last in the ratings.
Well, it probably is. Yeah. But there's no doubt that it is harder to find objective journalism on television. You can still find it in the print media. I think it's out there in droves on the Internet. But folks live busy lives, and they don't have time to go find it, I think, is part of the problem.
Yeah, we've got a comment from Ben on Twitter, a tweet that says, "I am more worried about blind faith in parties than I am in partisanship." We're going to take a call now from Denise in Franklin. Denise, are you there?
Yeah.
Good to have you
here.
Thank you for joining the program.
Thank you. I have a question for your panel.
Certainly.
And it's a thought that's run through my mind, not necessarily one that I've taken time to do a lot of in-depth research on. Mm-hmm. The Tea Party movement and the move and we're seeing in the Republican Party, on the surface at least, reminds me of a lot of what happened to the Democratic Party in the 1970s. I think perhaps there are elements within the Democratic Party who have a little bit of forgetfulness of some of the more liberal activities early on, well, not even early on, but in the recent decades, that maybe these people aren't as much in the news as they used to be with regard to the Democratic Party. But a lot of the leftist activities that happened in the 60s and 70s drove people away from the more moderate elements of the Democratic Party, drove them away from the Democratic Party, and you saw that result with the rise in popularity in young Republican clubs and whatnot in the 80s.
Denise,
does anyone give any thought to that or do you have a comment?
Let me toss that. I think if I can reframe this, those of us who are around covering politics during that time, there was an awful lot of discussion, particularly as Bill Clinton began his rise, about how the party could move back to the center from what was perceived to be the McGovern wing in the McGovern era. Are we seeing sort of the return of that? Denise, I hope you'll be willing to take your answer off the air, because we literally do have a lot of calls stacked up here in very little time. Thanks. Yeah, Brian Howie.
Well, I think the Democratic Party back in the 60s and 70s did veer left, and then we had 1980, which was a correction, and brought in the Reagan and Bush administrations. And by the time Bill Clinton came in, yeah, there was a concerted effort to steer the party back into a centrist mode. So that's the one thing is America has been very good over the centuries that if it shifts too far right or left, there's usually a correction that brings it back into the center. And I hope that stays in the course.
Yeah, we've got just a little bit more than 2 minutes left. So
I just want to say, and what people forget with Bill Clinton is that he won office with minority of the vote. I mean, without Ross Perot, he wouldn't have been president of the United States, most people believe. And Barack Obama is actually the first Democrat to win a majority of the vote since Jimmy Carter, I believe.
I think since 1976, when not in 80, because Carter didn't win in 80,
right.
But in 1976, I think that's correct. Terry Jett, your thoughts on
yeah,
this?
I don't know if we can make the same correlation between the Tea Party movement and those that shaped the Civil Rights Movement or the women's second wave feminist movement. I mean, those groups are probably more identifiable than those who actually are associated with the Tea Party movement. But in terms of the movement or response of the political process, to these issues that gave rise to the way that policies were determined and what sort of policies and also even legal decisions came out of some of those movements, there might be some correlation there.
Is there a solution, a way to get people working at the federal level together better than they have been? Kip, too, I'll, as a political professional of long standing,
I really think it takes leadership for that to occur. And, of course, I'm partisan myself, and so I'm going to blame the Republicans. But I really do believe that at this moment in our history, they are refusing to participate. They're refusing to try to compromise. And so the compromise has occurred. I mean, the legislation, I've repeated this, and I think it is true, the legislation that President Obama has signed has not been left-wing legislation. It's been moderate legislation.
You have been listening to No Limits here on WFYI 90.1 FM. We thank you for listening to us, and I'd like to thank my guests, Indiana Republican Party Chair Murray Clark, former Indiana and Marion County Democratic Party Chair Kip Two, whose new book, Journey to Blue, about how Barack Obama captured Indiana, is in bookstores now. Terry Jett, Chair of Political Science Department at Butler University. My friend Brian Howie, editor of Howie Politics Indiana. I'm John Kroll. Please join us again next week here on No Limits.
A production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Executive Director Mary Hartnett. Producer Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator Melissa Davis. Technical Producer Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineers Matt Sosi and Josh Hamig. We invite you to join us each Thursday at noon for No Limits, and you can listen online at WFYI.org.